I'm Jordan.
And I'm Rosanna.
And on this podcast, we explore how to take life off autopilot
and relentlessly pursue a life worth living
together.
Hello, and welcome to Season 3, Episode 7 of the Relentless Pursuit Podcast, COVID-19, 1 year later. Because 1 year ago, on March 13th, all of our lives changed in a forever kind of way. That was the day President Trump declared COVID-19 a national emergency. And when I think about that, the one thing that always comes to mind is this. What a long, strange trip it's been. That was the title of an album of the Grateful Dead. And that was literally the first thing that came to mind because I think there's really no better way to title this year because it has just been long and strange. And I feel like we're finally starting to come out on the other side.
Yeah, there's been a lot of cliches that people have used just over the course of the past year to talk about, man, like what strange times these are. And, you know, there's a lot of kind of phrases because it is difficult, I think, to really encapsulate in a short space, like how we are feeling and what we're experiencing. And I really don't think we'll be able to understand this fully until, you know, we're distanced from it until it's hindsight several years from now.
Yeah. I mean, as we were talking about this, getting ready for the episode, like I'm still unsure how I feel.
Yeah.
I feel like I don't want to say like PTSD, but a little bit like it's really not over. There's still some struggles. There's still a lot going on. Mm-hmm. But there's some light at the end of the tunnel and it's been hard and it's been even hard to say out loud that it's been hard because what's hard for me is not the same hard as somebody else. And although it's been hard, there are a lot of people who are suffering, and we are not suffering. And so it's hard to even want to say that it's been hard.
Right. Well, let's look at 2020. You know, there are a lot of memes at the end of the year, you know, FU 2020 and a lot of other things.
Like dumpster fires.
We couldn't wait to get out of that year. And of course, you know, just a turn of the calendar to 2021 doesn't just erase everything. But, you know, looking back at really like the full year that we've come to now, I wanted to just start with a few stats, a few images, a few just kind of references of things that we have, you know, sort of collectively experienced. The first stat is, I just feel like this needs to be first. As of today, the total number of deaths, 524,000 in the United States. And it's difficult to wrap my mind around.
It's a big number.
I remember when the number was much smaller, you know, and just on the news, you know, they would kind of say like, you know, we passed another milestone. I even heard predictions that the total number would be, you know, something like around 400,000 at the time. I'm like, that's crazy. And now like here we are 1 year later, we've surpassed that. So I can't imagine. 2.4 million Americans diagnosed with COVID-19. But then we think about the cultural and the economic ramifications as well. There are hundreds of thousands of businesses that closed their doors permanently. And there are millions of people who have been unemployed and seen their businesses, seen their careers just gone. Many of which, in terms of businesses, many of which will not come back.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even only their livelihood, but like their dreams for some families, generations of work and sweat, you know, brick by brick building something. And it has completely, you know, erased that for them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and so I think that's the first concern that arose was obviously public health. But what we also learned alongside that too is there's these economic ramifications for the decisions that we make, and trying to balance those two things is impossible. And so just kind of watching us grapple with that over the course of the year has been, you know, it's presented so many challenges, so many debates, you know, so many uncertainties for people. So looking at, some of the things that also happened in 2020 that maybe it's debatable, you know, to what extent they were influenced by COVID-19, but, you know, you had a lot of marches and protests and riots. We had an election, which itself brought about marches and protests and riots. You had, I don't know how to say it, like an awakening of sorts, or coming to terms with just race relations in the United States, and has brought, I think, a new level of discourse just about how particularly blacks, but all minorities, are, you know, just being treated and having fair share of opportunity in the U.S. And so that has been certainly a conversation that, you know, we've engaged in, I think, learned a lot over the past year. There has been sort of this societal immunology lesson that we've all learned, right? So we have these terms like social distancing, and we've been wearing masks and talking about, you know, how certain viruses spread, how we get sick from one another, some of the steps we can take to prevent that. Now with vaccines and vaccination, like, I feel like we've all kind of reached a new level of understanding.
Well, I mean, do you remember when the base level of understanding at the beginning of this was wash your hands and put on a mask? Like, and that was like,
well, that wasn't even at the beginning. Like, we didn't really wear masks even until the summer.
But it was just this idea of like, people being resistant to do very basic hygienic things to keep germs from spreading. And it was like this like awakening of sorts of like, oh, I should be washing my hands more. I should cover my mouth. Like, mm-hmm. And then people's resistance to want to do those things to protect themselves. And if even not to protect themselves, to protect others.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting, like, turn of.
Well, and that's what I wanted to get into a little bit as well, because I think that this has been happening for the past several years, but it also like brought us to a new level of what is news? What is science? What are facts? What is true? And I mean, for every recommendation or statistic or fact that you hear, you can also find the opposite, and you can find millions of people who also subscribe to the opposite. And so it became a very convoluted dialogue, just even with people that we know well and people that we love, to really discern what is fact and what is fiction, and then try to make the most appropriate decisions based off of that. And so it create this new challenge, this really frustrating and confusing time where we all want what's best, but we can't even agree what is best. And we definitely can't agree on what steps it are required to get there.
Well, and I think there was also a line of not even what's best is like what's needed. Mm-hmm. Like, we have to put our differences aside. We have to put our opinions aside, and we have to do what's best, not just for ourselves, but for others.
Right. And so those are thorny questions anyway. But if you throw in, you know, off the convoluted nuance of like misinformation and whatnot, then that certainly, it has contributed to a lot of the circumstances that we've experienced as well. So I came up with a short series of images, because those are stats, and I think statistics are good for giving us like a broad overview of things. But then I think about this at the individual level as well, and just some of the different ways that this has impacted people. So I think about the people who are isolated in hospitals, who are sick, or maybe even dying alone. And I think of the funerals for those individuals who could, you know, be scarcely attended.
If at all.
If at all. I think of the people who are single, and especially during the time that we're referring to as quarantine, the people who are single and who were alone for days or weeks at a stretch. And I think of the opposite. I think of those who are cramped, where you have a small space, a two-bedroom apartment shared by two or three families. I think of the empty restaurant building in your neighborhood that you used to pass by and see people enjoying, being closed and perhaps not opening again. And I think about the dreams of the owners as they sat alone at the bar looking at bills and just wondering, like, what the heck is going to happen next? I think of the brides and grooms who had a date picked and realized that that wedding that they had looked forward to was not going to happen. And deciding, should we push the date? Should we still get married? How do we celebrate this super important and remarkable moment in our lives in a way that we never imagined? I think about the mother or the father coming home just to let their family know that they've been laid off and that they were the breadwinner. They were the one who brought home the money that paid for the food that they needed, and scratching their heads, wondering what really was going to happen next. And I think about that same family looking at their rent and their electric bill and their insurance payment and all the things that stack up, and realizing that opportunities are getting fewer and not more plentiful. I look at the empty shelves at the grocery stores. We could joke about toilet paper all we want, but we know that there were other things that were impacting us. In fact, that's one of the things we'll talk about too. Like the first time in my life, probably, that I've seen an empty shelf at a store. We could talk about how Zoom and other mediums of live, like digital interaction, became much more prominent, and how pants became optional during business meetings. And but also, you know, along with that, the idea of working from home, and you know, how many people were we on the phone with who you imagine them at a customer service center, but you can hear kids and pets in the background instead. Or you have, you know, people trying to balance their children's own e-learning with their own work obligations. And let's talk about the kids who find a lot of their safety and a lot of their joy and social interactions and learning coming from school, and being told, many of them, for almost an entire year, that they cannot go back to that space, that they are home. And the list goes on. So I wanted to like present those images, and this is heavy just as I'm picturing each one of those, and we could picture many more of the experiences that we know people have undergone. I, you know, I think about our first responders and our medical workers who were, you know, working in a lot of new and challenging capacities over the past year. And then I think about, you know, our folks even at home who sort of manned the home front and made sure that everyone within their circle was okay as best as possible. So that those are the images that come to mind for me. And I didn't intend on even dwelling on those that long, but I feel like we have to give these last 365 days their weight and their due. Because it is unlike anything else. And I don't know. It's we have to be able to talk about it and recognize the impact that it's had on ourselves, those around us, and in society.
Yeah, I mean, knowing now what happened and what, you know, just how it all unfolded. If we knew then what we knew now, you know, it's like you kind of wish you knew. Because when, you know, it was kind of like a pandemic was called, right, a national emergency and shelter in place and, like, you know, kind of a lockdown ordered, you know, we were looking at each other like, is this for real? Like, we live in a time and a place where nobody tells you to stay home, that you, you know, can't go to the store and have a million options of bread and peanut butter and eggs and milk. And so it was kind of like, we had heard the chattering. You had heard the chattering like a week before because you're in public education.
Well, even more so. Like, kind of heard about this thing that's, you know, and of course, everything seems so distant when you watch the news, right? It's other people, another place. And I remember there were memes, like someone couldn't come into work and there was a picture. This is probably in February of last year. There's a picture we sent on the text that said, I'm sure you have like the coronavirus. And it's a guy sitting on a beach holding a corona, right? And it was that was kind of some of the jokes at the time. And then the stories started emerging from China and from Italy and, you know, from these other places.
But it wasn't here. It was somewhere else. And so we weren't worried about it. And so then, you know, you would come home from work and, you know, kind of bring up some things that you were hearing, mm-hmm. like at the administrative level and at like levels higher than you. This is kind of the chatter. This is, if this happens here, like we're already putting plans in motion to like move kids to remote learning. And I remember you telling me these things, and it's like things that didn't make sense at the time or things that you couldn't even imagine, and mm-hmm. being like, wait, what do you mean?
Right.
Like the way that the world works and the way that our lives were structured, like there was like this imminent cloud, and it was almost like you can't fathom it because you've never seen it. It's never happened before. And so you're kind of just in this state of like mm-hmm. denial, like that would never happen.
Yeah. I remember our principal, this is probably maybe just a week or two, you know, prior to March 16th. But we were starting to make plans for what at the time we were saying might be like 2 or 3 weeks of remote learning. And I remember responding like, wow, that is such a long time. You know, I think of a snow day, right? That's one or like 2 days. Time, yeah. Right. And then that's kind of fun. You get like a quick break maybe, and then you get back to learning. So I was like, 2 or 3 weeks is crazy. But then it was very sudden where we had, you know, I would say a relatively normal week. But then by the end of that week, realizing like this is real, we're seeing these shutdowns, you know, at place after place after place. And then finally it came home and we said, all right, for the time being, like these doors are going to be closed.
Well, and I remember getting like the email from the school. So like you had kind of like mentioned kind of that chattering and like these plans in place and it didn't seem real. And then there was an email from the school, which you get at work. And so you're seeing it and I'm seeing it. And then like having like the kids are at school, but having to like explain to this to them when they come home. So that was like on a Friday. On that Saturday, Leo had his last basketball game. Yeah. And it was like this saying goodbye to people in this awkward way. Cause like, no one understood what was about to happen.
And, like, okay, yeah, see you. Okay, and even then, yeah, we'll see you in a few weeks.
Like, well, yeah, you know, there was a couple of people who weren't there because they were already scared. And there was this kind of like tension in the air. Mm-hmm. And then it was just like, okay, two to three weeks. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. No big deal. Like it felt hard. It felt scary. No big deal. And then as for me, like with a two, you know, we talked about the Enneagram. A couple weeks ago, this like pandemic kickoff was like my sweet spot because like as a two, you often find yourself needing to serve others. So I'm like, okay, we're going to be home. Mm-hmm. I got this. Like, okay, school's going to be online. I went on Amazon. I bought educational games. We came up with a schedule for like how this would work for our kids.
We put a schedule on our fridge. Mostly, you know, so they would knew when snack time when, was yeah, and so when it was not.
Correct. We moved a like makeshift home office into our bedroom because you needed to be on meetings, but you needed a place where there was a door and there was quiet so you could work. Mm-hmm.
So we have, yeah, and it's kind of awkward to think about it, but yeah, like we had a workspace in the bedroom, which I hate, but it really became the only place, the only practical place here to work. And for even that, I was grateful, you know, compared to, you know, however many families were kind of in the same space, you know, working alongside one another.
So, yeah. So, I mean, at that moment, I was kind of in a good place. It's like, okay, there's something scary happening, but we're all going to be here. And, you know, we were like facilitating, like setting that up and what is it going to look like? And how are we going to make this work? And we've got three kids who need to learn. And so like, where are they going to be? And how can I help them? And how am I going to facilitate it? And then, you know, looking at each other, I remember on the way home on that Friday, you stopped at Walmart. I was like, well, if we're going to be locked down, we need diapers and wipes for the baby, you know, he's almost two, but, yeah. And remember, you came home with like diapers and wipes and some very large boxes of Cheerios and some other like random items because you're like, I was there and I felt like
there's an anxiety there. And I had seen things I'd never seen before. Like I mentioned the empty shelves. I mentioned like people grabbing carts and like wiping them down before using them themselves. You know, this is before like grocery stores really implemented a lot of those things that we see now. And it was all very surreal. I'm like, this is something different. And, yeah. And I never, like even just going to the store.
You never stop. Cause yeah. I get groceries or, yeah. I mean, and we have the luxury of we've had groceries delivered to like kind of help me out with like timing and kids and schedules and whatnot. And so I had ordered some groceries and then I told you, I'm like, I feel like I need to go to the store and buy more stuff. You know, good old Americana here. We've got a fridge in the garage and we're going to stuff that because what if we can't leave? Like we need food. There's a lot of us. And I remember being at the local grocery store and like for the first time being overwhelmed. I've never been in a store and like felt like I couldn't breathe. I never felt like anxious about food. I was like, what do I get? What do we need? What will stay well for a long period of time? And I just remember being in the aisle and like literally like holding onto the cart and just being like, the cart was full and I wasn't even sure of what. And it was like this out of body experience. Like, are we going to be okay?
Yeah.
And that was like the first time, like as an adult, I felt fear.
Yeah.
You know, for the first time, not knowing like what is this going to be?
And it's interesting. I think that fear is interesting too, because I don't think at the time we were really afraid of COVID, if you think about it.
No.
Right. And we were taking precautions, but it was more like just kind of this idea of this shutdown, this isolation, not knowing what was going to happen next. And just that the whole surrealness. So it was almost like, I don't know if it's appropriately placed or this misplaced fear, but that idea of like everything that you're used to being turned off was very scary.
Yeah. I mean, I remember coming home from the grocery store and telling you that I like kind of like panicked while I was there. And you're like, it's fine. We have what we need. We have each other. Like we have a house. Like, so at that point, like I almost felt like, yeah, you feel untouchable. Like you're like, we're fine. We're healthy. Everybody here is fine. Everybody we know is fine. So it wasn't like that we were scared of getting sick. It was everything else. Like, would they really shut down a grocery store? Right.
Right.
What is the thing that they call it? Like when you're not allowed to like leave your house and you have to like be allowed to let
house,
out
house arrest.
No, there's something else. There's like a military term, I think. Kind of like they had in Italy. It was kind of like a national order. Like you could only leave to go to the grocery store on certain days, like certain people. You uh-huh. couldn't leave your martial law.
Okay.
You know, people were talking about that. And I'm like, mm-hmm. where are, like, this was not the America or the United States.
It's like a Twilight Zone episode.
Right? Yeah. It was just this out of body experience.
Yeah.
And so then when it didn't just last 2 weeks, and then it was 4 weeks, and then it was 5 weeks, like,
and then you start thinking like, this is going to last the rest of the school year. Well, at least we can get to the summer.
And then by the time we got to the summer, I was tired.
Yeah.
Because I had really facilitated like what was really an entire summer worth of like the kids being in home and this change in schedule and whatnot. But then having a whole summer in front of us, but with no baseball, with no soccer, with no pool,
yeah.
With no play dates, no birthday parties, right? Like, so again, there were things in there as like a two, this like serving others, like, great, we'll organize a drive-by birthday for our sons.
Right.
We're going to make the best of this. Like, we're not going to let our kids struggle through this. We're not going to let them see like the ugly things that are going on. We're not going to let them live in fear. Mm-hmm. And so as a mom, like just this overdrive of like, I'm all in. Like I'm gonna make this work, and I'm gonna make this happen. And the longer it went on, I think I was in denial about how much that was actually taking a toll on me.
Yeah. All right. So I know we could talk more about sort of like our family and our journey with that, but I want, since you're bringing it up, I kind of want to skip to that part about you.
Okay.
And just ask you to explore that a little bit more. Like how, 1 year later, how are you doing, Rosanna?
I might cry because I know I mentioned this other day, but it's been hard. It's been a hard year.
Yeah.
And we have everything that we need. We have food. We have shelter. You have a career that supports us. I watched mine kind of tank. Mm-hmm. Because I could not plan events. I could not coordinate weddings. I watched clients, you know, like lose everything that they had, you know, put money into and have to shift and pivot. And then I was there to like support them through that. I'm like, okay, we can make this work, or we'll reschedule, or we'll resize and we'll reshift. And so I was kind of neglecting my own self-care. I felt socially and just like emotionally depleted, you know, trying to keep the kids' spirits up and give them what they need, kind of watching them struggle in certain ways, but really just trying to like get them through it. And I had to start asking myself, like, what do I need? Because I was running on empty. I think even now I'm still partially running on empty.
Yeah.
I had to ask myself if I needed to be the one to help everybody else. And I had to step back.
So at what point did you start asking yourself that?
I think it was when the plan was for the kids to go back to school. And the school and the district here has done everything that
I
they can.
I love our teachers. They've been
they have
so
done
gracious
everything they can to get these kids in and to facilitate learning. And then when it was determined that just because of space and regulations and the things that they were being told, like it's not like just their random decision, that they couldn't go back. So that would have been like maybe like mid-August. I was like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. It's been 6 months. And even then I was kind of starting to work, but it was hard.
Yeah.
It was a hard juggle.
Is it hard for you to say that? Maybe hard for you to kind of get to the point where you can even ask yourself like how you're doing is because I almost see it as two reasons. So like the first is that your inclination is always just bent to take care of others. But I also think too that like we have listed, there are a lot of people genuinely
suffering.
And do you feel like you can't give yourself permission to feel sad or challenged because your suffering is, just in comparison to others. And it is the truth, and we can acknowledge that. Like, in comparison to others, you still have it.
100%.
Yeah. And so it's difficult to say, like, well, it's hard for me.
Well, and there were, a couple of people who would ask, like, hey, how are you doing? Like, I know you've, like, been home with the kids through all of this. I know your business is just, like, you can't take on clients. You can't do this. Like, mm-hmm. is that hard for you? And I would just kind of brush it off. And I would say, like, it is what it is. Like, none of the things that are happening outside of what's in my house, I can control. And so the only thing I really can control is my response to it. And so for my response to it was, I'm going to do the best that I can with what I have. Mm-hmm. But that became like smaller.
Yeah.
Because I would focus on so many other people and things and what they needed. I mean, I was watching people that I knew and that I loved fall apart during this.
Yeah.
Because being at home, like trying to school at home was hard for them. And it didn't work for their kids and it didn't work for their family. I mean, people like in tears, people like I'm talking to and they're sobbing and they're not in a good place. Mm-hmm. So for someone to be like, oh, hey, how you doing? Mm-hmm. My response is usually I'm fine.
Right.
Because I've got it.
Yeah.
Like I would muster through and even if it wasn't
you
hard. Did.
If you're not feeling great, like you can still
have
enough energy for the next
correct.
Day.
Correct. And so it was hard to like tell people. I mean, and I remember telling a few people like, I feel like I'm drowning. And they would literally say, oh, no, you're not. Like,
yeah.
Right? Like
oh,
the
funny.
Kids are yeah. happy. Oh, you're doing a podcast. Oh, I heard you like you just are going to pivot some of your events and you're still going to
well,
do like
you know, you and your husband have an education background. So it must be easy.
Oh, it must be easy. And right? I remember someone told me that like, oh, it must be nice that Jordan can sit there with the kids and you and, help with all the schooling. Mm-hmm. And I go, Jordan's upstairs from the time he wakes up mm-hmm. until the end of the day working a normal day. He's not down here yeah. helping me navigate three kids' learning schedules. And I said, I'm getting no help. And there was like this realization that like everybody thought their hard was harder than everybody else's. But we mm-hmm. were all struggling,
yeah.
all of us, in all of our situations, whether we had jobs or not had jobs, had food, didn't have food, had kids at home, were alone by ourselves. Like we were all struggling. It was hard for everybody. Everybody's hard was just different.
Yeah.
And so for me, I think I realized like everybody was struggling. Mm-hmm. But I felt like no one allowed me to be okay. Like I didn't have permission to struggle.
Right.
And so I didn't give myself permission either. And so I feel depleted. I read this quote. It was an article I was reading. And I think this applies probably to any parent or caregiver. And it said this, people talk about how moms could lift a car off their children. And if you think about that, just like in parenting, like the strength parents must muster to like raise their children and protect them. It's like, right? If we were forced to, we would lift a car for them, like mm-hmm. just to save them. But even though you can do it, it doesn't mean you didn't do damage to your body when lifting the car. 2020 was like lifting a car off your kids. 2021 is going to have to be, how are those women or parents or caregivers able to heal? Mm-hmm. And so that really hit me for the first time. Like, there have been a lot of days and weeks this past year where I did not know how I felt. And even today, I'm unsure. Mm-hmm. Like, we made the best of everything that we could. And I don't think I've tried not to miss a beat for you, for our kids, for our family, for our extended family, for our friends, but, carrying the weight of everyone else's needs and trying to make everything okay for them is more than I bargained for.
I have a question I want to ask you. I almost don't want to ask it, but have I in any way let you down?
No. Which makes it even harder because you would think that if you have everything you need and you have a supportive partner that you shouldn't feel like that.
Right.
Right. Like you were still working. And I remember there were times where I've like told you I was frustrated. I'm like, I know like you're here and you're working, but I wish that you could like be here and like help.
Be present, yeah.
And you couldn't because you were in the house. It's almost like when your spouse is home.
It's especially in that administrative role. Like it was just on meetings and phone calls and email, just nonstop. It actually like increased, which was, and I don't want to dwell on.
Well, see, right. Some people's work from home is different than other people's work from home.
Right. And it became, you know, it became hard for me to, you know, look out the window and see you like playing with the kids or about to take them on a walk or a bike ride and feeling kind of trapped. And which was interesting because that might happen on a normal day. If, you know, I'm at work and you're here with whichever kids are here. But because we're physically separated from one another to do our thing, like it's a little bit easier to do that. But when we're all here together,
it's almost like those separate things. I had some unrealistic expectations that you should be here helping me. Mm-hmm. And that's not what it was. And that's not what it could be. And I, on the other hand, at times when things were hard with the kids and everything else, so wished I could go upstairs and close the door and work.
Right.
So that you could be down here, you know, prepping snacks and lunches and dragging them out for bike rides when it was only like 42 degrees because we needed to get out of the house and, mm-hmm. you know.
You did share with me some stats about our walking and bike ride from last year.
Yeah, but they're on my phone, which is recording somewhere here. I think we biked, so from, I would say March, I think it was like
March to August.
Right? March 21st through August 31st. So we continued to walk and bike ride after that. Mm-hmm. But it was, do you remember like what the total was?
It was
like
over 300 miles of biking.
Yeah.
And I think it was over 100 of walking.
I think it was like closer to
As tracked by my watch.
Your watch, yeah. God bless my Apple Watch. Yeah. So that was cool because usually we set a summer goal of biking like 100 miles as a family. But between March and August, we biked over, I think it was like almost even close to like 325 mm-hmm. or something like that.
Yeah, we do like two or three a day sometimes.
And then the walking thing, most of that walking, I would say most of that walking was just me. Uh-huh. Some of it was us as a family. But to walk like over 150 miles, like in those months, like that's where I kind of found some escape and some release. I would walk. And there were times that I walked alone. There were times that a friend would join me or my mom would join me. Mm-hmm. There were times that I walked in the pouring rain because of the weight of everything. I just needed to get out and just to get some air. And
then we joined the COVID dog club, right? Yeah, got our dog in September. It was another reason to go walking. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of walks happened after that too.
Yeah. So we're obviously not out of the woods yet, and there's a lot to look back on and kind of reflect on and to talk about. And I think it's just good to talk about it. And you know, a year makes a convenient milestone. So I'm trying to think about this balance though that you're talking about. Because on the one hand, there are people who need or at least benefit from care. From you. And there are people who, you know, obviously have suffered a great deal. And then there's also this need to like, just kind of look after ourselves as well. So like just looking back, what have we learned anything about that? Like how do we care for others who genuinely need it? How do we care for others who would benefit from it? How do we care for ourselves?
So, and we've talked about this season is this idea of self-care. That was not in my vocabulary before this past year. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was not in my vocabulary before 6 months ago. That wasn't something that I prioritized. That's not something I made space for. I think because of the weight of everything in this past year, and it may have even started before September. I'm thinking July. I think I was like burnt out. And I think I've spent more time just like an hour at a time when there's free time. Now, there is no free time in our house with four kids. There is just not. Our two-year-old doesn't nap. Nobody naps here. Like, there's no free time. So in those pockets, instead of like turning outwards, which you really couldn't turn outwards because you couldn't go anywhere, you couldn't see people, even the people you knew were like leery of being near you. I mean, it was just this pressure. I kind of just recoiled this past year. Mm-hmm. You would just say, go upstairs and close the door. Mm-hmm. You told me that at least once a day, just go upstairs and close the door. Mm-hmm. And I would literally just sometimes sit there and do nothing because I was just overwhelmed. And so I think there was a lot of that. And then it shifted into like finding good, healthy alternatives. And so sometimes that was bike riding. Sometimes that was walking. Sometimes that was talking. I wanted nothing to do with FaceTime and Zoom chats. I didn't want to be virtual with people, I really just kind of pulled in. Mm-hmm. And I know some people took that the wrong way and some people noticed a change, but like for me, I couldn't handle one more person.
Yeah.
There were six here that I had to facilitate life for and I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
So it was hard. So I think there are people that need help, but for me, because I wasn't taking care of myself, I didn't have extra to give.
Yeah.
And so there was this shift of like knowing that I had to take care of myself first.
Yeah. I think for us too, I just think of our conversations at the end of 2020 and kind of who we want to be as we get into 2021. And I think about the idea of charity has become just more common in our conversations and in our, you know, trying to not just, you know, watch the news and be like, man, that's awful, and then turn it off. You know, not just be aware of different ways that people are struggling, but to be more engaged with that from, you know, whatever position we happen to be in. So I find that that's been, you know, something that we've talked about and tried to implement in our lives. But at the same time, kind of be better at like just understanding ourselves as well. And I feel like that's helped. Like we can kind of take care of our own mental and emotional needs and become strengthened by that so that we do have more to offer to those around us too.
So you've been asking me questions. I've obviously been focusing on some heavy stuff that I haven't really been talking about. Why don't you take us into something a little more lighthearted? The year was hard, right? Like life is hard. Even if we do it right, even if we're healthy and we're thriving, like life is hard. There's challenges, there's curveballs, there's things that we don't prepare for that catch us off guard. What was still good this year? When you look back, like we could name all of the hard things, but talk to me about what was good for you or from what you've seen or from what you've been experiencing.
Well, we always said we wanted more quality time with the family. It's been no shortage of that. Actually, you know, before March of last year, I remember our calendar, like every night had things on it. And one of my favorite things would be like, I'd come home and I'd look at the calendar or I'd ask you like, what do we have going on tonight? And when the answer was nothing, I'd be like, yes. Then that became the opposite, right? Pretty quickly, right? Then eventually it was like, do we have anything going on tonight? No. Do we have anything going on tonight? No. And you just look at the weeks and the months go by. So I think what was good was, you know, taking a step back from everything that had captivated our time and attention so much, all of the activities and the busyness that comes along with life and work and kids and everything. And, then I think what was good was, and I think this will continue to be the case when we do have the chance to be a part of something, being it, you know, social, part of the community, just being out of our house somewhere, I have experienced a greater degree of just gratitude and appreciation for those opportunities.
Yeah, I think I did write down some takeaways for this episode. And in this last year, I think one of the biggest things, and it's, you know, kind of one of those cliche sayings is like, the little things are the big things. And you think about all the little things that like were taken or were not things that we were not able to do. And so even now, as we start to have a taste of those little things, it's like, it like, there's something about it. Like it like fills my soul.
Here's some little things that I've missed. Shaking hands, hugs and kisses.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the things that stands out to me the most. Because you and I are just used to being like, you know, close to people and, you know, like even physically close.
Well, even with strangers, hi, it's nice to meet you, and a firm handshake. Yeah. Or people that we know, like feeling like that you could just hug them.
Yeah.
And now it's like, yeah, it's like this energy of like.
We'll be asking each other, like, is it okay if I give you a hug? Like, you know. And so just like, yeah, that uncertainty with those that physical nonverbals. And- yeah. I'm trying to think of other like even funny things. Like I remember the pools were closed and we were super bummed about it because we live at the pool. So we tried like everyone else, like we tried seeing if we could like just buy a pool, like something to entertain us in the summer.
Yes, we missed the window. We should have been buying it in March. Big we tried time. In May. Like,
yeah. So we ended up getting like an inflatable kiddie pool, which
we tried to make. We have a 2-year-old, so it worked for him.
And then we told the other kids like, well, why don't you go play in the pool? And they put their swim trunks in and it was like a small jacuzzi for the rest of them.
It's like a beached whale in there.
So, you know, I think about that. I think about, the appreciation that I have for our kids' teachers and just knowing how challenging it is for them to adapt everything that works so well for our kids in person and finding some workaround, some way to build relationship and to transmit skill and knowledge to our kids through a screen. I mean, they really have done an impressive job with that. And if I would, like, I'd find them and I'd hug them. I'd buy them lunch.
Yeah. We tried. We tried to buy lunch for the teachers at our kids' school, but that was a no-go.
We could still do that this year.
I think so. Mm-hmm. I think about even just having to stay away from my parents.
That was hard.
Who live like just a few blocks from here.
That 7 or 8 weeks, I think.
We walked over there or would bike ride and we would stand on their driveway and they would stand on the front porch. And we did that, I think, for as long as we could. We didn't have Easter with them. It was a long time. Mm-hmm. And then there came a point, and I know everybody's different and I know everybody's family is different. His situation is different. And I know people who still have not seen their family or are masked around their family. And, because our family lives so close and they're retired and we were not leaving the house, we then kind of let them into our very small circle, us and my parents and my brother, mm-hmm. And my brother and his wife and his kids eventually, just opening that up. But there came a point where that was such a release where some of that emotional part of being isolated was so heavy. Mm-hmm. And I think was so detrimental to even just emotional health that mm-hmm. Letting those small interactions back in was huge.
Yeah. Well, it was finding somewhere we can go, somebody we could see.
That was safe and that was, we were all still taking precautions and, but that was huge. I think another huge thing, we had an episode dedicated to our road trip. I know even my parents thought we were crazy for hitting the road and getting out of here. Mm-hmm. But being away from our house that we had been so tied to and away from screens and video games and Netflix and really just spending, a week outdoors in Colorado and then a week outdoors in Texas was
palpably refreshing for all of us.
Yeah. It was a much needed break. And so I think that's one of the things that I would encourage people that as life starts to get back to normal, what people need is everybody needs is different. And so you have to figure out what's going to work for you. Mm-hmm. And I know at the time, kind of feeling some of that tension from others, oh, you're really going to do that. I would never do mm-hmm. I think sometimes we have to let that go because we have to do what's right for us and what we need to stay kind of.
It's respect the decisions others are making, but we need to also do what we feel is appropriate and, still obviously safe and responsible.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct.
Yeah. There's a lot that I'd like to get into. And I think, there's multiple conversations, multiple episodes coming from this too. But a lot that we're not talking about. I'm thinking back to the episode we did in August about education. And now we are a good chunk of the school year through. Looking back, I'd kind of like to revise, some of my thoughts and insights just about learning for kids and how, how we see that impact unfolding. I want to talk about a little bit of what's to come as well, because we don't know.
We have no idea,
right? And there may be, with vaccine, there may be light at the end of the tunnel in terms of COVID and getting life back to normal. But that raises more questions too. Why go back to normal? What parts of normal
are worth going back to?
Are worth going back to? What parts are reevaluating for all of us? And also thinking about I don't want to be too much of a doomsayer, but the next COVID-like event. And there's a lot that you can fit in that basket that could kind of knock us off our feet. So what have we learned from this that we can then take forward with us? Are we at all any stronger from this experience? I would like to say yes, but my fear is that in some ways it's made us weaker too. It's just worn us down. So how do we brace for upcoming challenges, whether they're personal or global?
Yeah, that's a scary thought to have. Not even really being out of this one, but it's true. We've haven't had to live through a war. We haven't had to live through there are certain things that we haven't had to deal with. So. Yeah. If something like that did happen, how does this past year, what we've learned about ourselves or what we need or how to structure things or who we need to lean on, what does that look like? How do we make sure that we have some of those answers so mm-hmm. that if faced with a similar challenge, we can kind of learn and grow.
Yeah. So you do have some takeaways that you wanted to close with?
Yeah, you know what? I have a few. And, you know, you can kind of make what you want out of them. I said this one earlier, life is hard. Even if we do it right, even if we are healthy and thriving, if we have a savings account, you know, to in case of hardship, like life is hard.
Yeah.
Right. This was more emotionally taxing on me than I ever thought. Mm-hmm. And not that I ever thought. I never anticipated that. So it was just supposed to be, you know.
So part of your takeaway is just like, it's okay to say that out loud.
I think so. Even if your heart isn't as desperate or as,
it's not as severe
as somebody else's, like heart is hard.
Maybe that's the other thing too, is recognizing that it has been hard, maybe in different ways, but it's been hard for everyone. And, you know, having that empathy as we just encounter other people.
Right. And the kind of like that, no expectations, like mm-hmm. we can't expect everyone to feel the same way about, you know, vaccines or what's next or do the same things that we do. And it's more of like, this is a personal thing. Like you got to handle you and yours. And, you know, that's all you can really worry about at this point. Yeah. The second one is if we come out of this the same, I think we did it wrong. And I would hate to say that anybody did anything wrong. Mm-hmm. But like when you spend months in the confines of your own home, like, did you take the time to notice all the useless stuff that you own? You know, did all the extra time you have, like, have you questioning your priorities, right? Yeah. If you strip away all the stuff that happens outside of your home, like, do you see where your priorities, like, were, did you have priorities in the wrong places? Do they need to shift now?
You're saying we kind of saw the life that we had built for ourselves in a very, like, raw way. Were we pleased with what we saw?
Did the slower pace, the empty calendar, the social and political unrest show you what truly matters? Did it reveal any biases? Did it reveal some ugly parts of you that you didn't want to admit that you're now having to address? Mm-hmm. Okay. Like for me, it was like a lot of those little things were the big things, faces, people, living in fear. Like, you know, it's getting me to question what's next for me, for us,
yeah.
You know? When the world outside your door begins to crumble, there's only one thing you can control. Because we couldn't control anything that was happening. Right. And the only thing we can control, you want to guess what that was?
Ourselves,
like our own attitude and our own reactions to it. And yeah. So I think that's a huge takeaway even for our kids, mm-hmm. right? Like if we sit down and have a conversation with our kids in the next couple of weeks about this past year and maybe celebrating all the ways that they pressed forward,
yeah.
You know, I think that's a big takeaway for them that we need to coach them through.
Well, yeah, and I didn't want the episode to end without us acknowledging our kids too. Because frankly, like that was the hardest thing for me, was to watch their just opportunities to be a kid kind of dwindle over the course of the past year. And in all the ways that means, from schooling to relationships and everything. So, I think that's a good idea. Like pulling them into the conversation similar to this one and celebrating them for who they are. And trying to find some ways to, you know, continue to like strengthen them and reopen some opportunities for them too.
Yeah. I mean, for our kids, tomorrow they're going back to school. So on
5 days a week, baby.
You'll be listening to this after record, but it is Monday, March 8th. Our three children, our oldest three, will be returning to school 5 days a week. Mm-hmm. And I am still unsure how I even feel about that. Like now they've been here and now they're leaving, right? It's everything I've kind of hoped and wished for. But instead of being happy, I still feel uneasy.
Yeah.
And I feel confused and I don't know what's next. Not for them and not for me. Mm-hmm. But talking to another mom at the gym, she said, I'm watching my very smart, very athletic, very outgoing child start to wilt at home. And so I can only be happy that our kids find the joy of being a kid and the joy of being at school again.
Yeah.
Regardless if it's in a mask and regardless if it's 3 to 6 to 9 to 12 feet away, mm-hmm. Just that sense of normalcy. So,
yeah.
And then I think the last one is life isn't just about us. I think we get so caught up in ourselves, in our own lives, in our own dreams, the ones that have been shattered and broken and deferred, in our own plans. But how often are we aware of others? Mm-hmm. Right. Even just the acknowledgement that this is hard for everybody. And so I have no expectations for anybody. Like everybody is dealing with their hard. And mm-hmm. so I'm just gonna a blanket of love over it all. mm-hmm. right? Like, I'm not going to tit for tat. I'm not going to measure. I'm not going to look where the grass is greener. Like, I'm just going to give love mm-hmm. and grace to everybody because they've all been going through it yeah. in a variety of capacities.
Yeah. That's good. I think this is a good conversation to return to as time goes on as well. Because like we said at the beginning, like sometimes hindsight has a way of helping us frame a better understanding of things than we could at the moment too. And we're still, you know, kind of in the midst of the experience. So I think it's important to just continue like reevaluate our experiences and what we're learning. And if we're even applying, you know, those takeaways as effectively as we could, and maybe adding to them as well.
Yeah. And I hope we can all look back too with a sense of like levity on a few things. You know, you and I made some TikTok videos together.
Yeah. I have an incredible Trick Shots TikTok video that got so few views.
Maybe we'll post them this week.
Yeah.
I got you to sit down and you're not like a TV watcher, but, you know, watch The Tiger King on Netflix. Like there are just some things that we literally, you know, just let ourselves have in quarantine, right? Like you would wear a nice shirt on top and had sweatpants or shorts on the bottom. Like,
sure. Like
let's laugh about those things because like, really, like if we can't laugh about some of these silly things, mm-hmm. you know, toilet paper birthday cakes because there was a shortage of toilet paper, like mm-hmm. it was hard and it was uncharted but it was funny too.
Yeah.
And so even reminding our kids of that, you know, amongst the struggle, there's always good.
Yeah. Well, thank you everyone for listening to our conversation about COVID 1 year later. I really hope that we in some way have done justice to just the experience that, of course, that you and I have shared, but, you know, all of us just societally have undergone over the past year. And as always, we're interested in hearing more of your thoughts and your takeaways and your experiences as well. So if you get an opportunity on social media or on the show notes page, give us a shout out and share with us any of your struggles, any of your funny moments as well. And we're interested in compiling some more of these experiences from everyone around us. Hopefully we all have more to learn as we go.
Thanks for joining us today. We look forward to our episode next week and we'll talk to you guys soon.
Thanks everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks so much for listening to today's show. We hope you'll use this conversation as a starting point for your own. We hope you're encouraged to think and act more intentionally.
If you want to learn more, you can visit our website, therelentlesspursuitpodcast.com, where you can find notes on today's show, plus additional blog posts, and you can subscribe to our free members list.
Please subscribe, leave a review, and share with your friends.
Facebook and Instagram are two great places to connect with us for daily doses of our quotable quotes, behind the scenes, and real-time photos, videos, and challenges.
Until next time, let us know how you are taking life off autopilot.
And relentlessly pursuing what matters.